cocktail over me. Worn out retreats, they won't catch me. I wonder why they cannot see. Inside my weeds, I wait to feed. All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast, a Jaybird.
Steve, what is happening?
It is the Ides of March are upon us, so
we're here. It's you're on the back half, sir.
I know.
It's that we've been calling it. It's Schmarch, finally.
We've been predicting March is coming for weeks now.
You never know what the next month is going to be. I guessed it would be March, but here we are.
Yeah, I know.
What awesome. Were the odds? But yeah, we're finally there. Getting to that back half. You can taste it. You can mm-hmm. touch it. You can feel it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it just don't try no it right now because your tongue will stick to anything feet. Outside.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was going channeling a little inner Mike Patton there, but nonetheless. Oh, Lordy. I'll tell you, this has been the week for me. Talk about a wacky one. I'll tell you, it's one of those deals where I'm eternally grateful for, you know, everything we do at Musky Shop. I just came back from playing with some of the big box boys, Jay. Some of the big
box. Yeah,
I'm
sure that was a good time.
Yeah, well, yeah. Great times, you know. Mm. It is. It's so interesting, guys. You look at, you know, the world of musky fishing, and it's such a nice space in the grand scheme of things when it comes to just how it works, because you can still deal with a little mom and pop in there. You know, it's not dystopian hellscape of mega corpse completely yet, but it's did a little trade show action. Obviously been on the water here, but that was excitamundo, Jay. The trade shows for me just won't end, it seems. So mm-hmm. get that action in there, try to give you guys the updates. But I'll tell you, not seeing much of anything in the development world. We're about to talk some new baits here. It is time. We'll get there. But I kind of made the rounds, got together and, you know, kicking around the pure fishing people, finally getting some answers on this beast reel. Right? So those are matriculating out, Jay. I think we got just mm-hmm. a tickle of them. Didn't they just tickle us with five or six of them or something?
More or less, yeah. We can't even put them for sale. We don't have right. enough. So, to support the people that are waiting.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, if you've been waiting on the beast, that's kind of taking place there. And then it's like, hey, what's going on the predator fishing on the musky scene? Nothing. Everybody's there, but it's kind of fun. And, you know, that just kind of the take there is, like I said, running those trade shows and trying to get it from those big boys. So you always appreciate kind of the mom and pop esque nature of things, Jay. You know, when sure. you, when you come back home and you get away from that. So other than that, it's that, you know, on the water for me, literally just two episodes ago, I'm you know, crying in my Cheerios about how cold it is, and now we're pushing 70s. Just instantaneously. I know that's kind of the last little, I guess, if you want to call it Indian summer, push through, just kind of one of these little transition things, and I think I'm on the backside mm-hmm. ever. You know,
good.
What's it
good
looking
deal.
Like on your extended? When do you think? Because, I mean, we could literally start saying, I mean, sometimes March is just horrible. But, I mean, what do you think? I mean, is it looking extended range there where the water might be opening up into the month, early April?
There's literally no way to tell right now. Yeah, the extended is just kind of like roller coaster. You know, mm-hmm. it was mid-40s yesterday. It's real cold today and tomorrow. So a few warmer days mixed in this week, but no, like, huge warm-up or bitter cold coming to, you know, extend ice fishing. We can't, there's no way to predict, like, ice out at this point. You know, let's just hope it's normal. That'd
well,
be great.
The thing to wrap your head around for you northern folks, especially Wisconsinites, after this podcast, Jay, seven more podcasts. A lot of people just mark their life. They don't even know what week it is. They just know when the podcast comes out, right? So they count,
yeah.
right? One guy was like, I am now 93 podcasts old.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
I don't know if he was, maybe he's in dog years or something, right?
Just, yes, it is.
Right. It's dog years. But
Dalmatian.
But nonetheless, that's how close we are. It is blown by the winter doldrums. You've got through the show season and all that stuff. But anyway, I guess I'll cut to the chase, Jay.
Please do.
Guys, it's one of these things. I'm going to explain it all. But finally, this Tuesday morning, I believe it's 9 Central. Is it 9 or 8 Central, Jay?
We'll go 9. Yeah.
Not one, not two, not three. Three new baits dropping from yours truly. Okay.
Bingo.
Sounds crazy, but it is what it is. Needed to get them out here. And the fine folks at Livingston, they trust me enough, Jay. At this point, we've had Titans, we've had Krakens, we got Mustangs, we got Kamikazes, we got
Magnus
and everything in between, and all the little stuff and your Big Macs and all this. And I said, I need these baits. This is what I want. This is what I would like to do. Bam, here we're going. You've heard us tease and talk about them, but finally here. So the thing is this is actually a smaller batch than typical because there's three of them. So Muskie Shop's got their hands on them, going to have that. So you have Menace, Critter, and Banshee, right? And so this kind of complements my line of thinking with Mustang. Mustang, if you believe it or not, Jay knows, came out late in the year. Number one seller at the shop. So last year was like Mustang and Magnus just dominated. And it's so funny. I never looked, Jay. I don't really go poking around looking at what's going on with much stuff, you know, fishing stuff. And it's so cool where I'm seeing now a lot of these baits just have a life of their own, right? Where, oh, here's this guy. You know, it's strange where like, you know, I found some videos the other day of like Titan. I sent them to you, Jay, the guys fishing Titans in Russia and the clips. And then it's just like, you know, from Russia to there's people in Wisconsin and all that stuff. So it's kind of cool. And you see a lot of these vision come through. But just like everything else, there's a reason, there's a method to the madness here. Of what I've kind of put together. It's never for the sake of making baits. It's not like, oh, we got to make baits. This is like hyper purpose driven stuff. So going to walk you through it. Here she blows. Here's what's going on. So probably what I would say the most accessible, and by accessible, I mean, you're going to get what I'm going for the quickest, kinda, is going to be the Menace. Right, so starting there, first and foremost, freaking $24. Thank you for one. Right, so got to give it to Livingston for getting the price right. So a brand new bait, Jay, never been seen, never been fished before, for $24. Silly, wonderful pricing. Right, can't beat it with a stick. And there's nothing coming out. We talked about. Here's what's going on with the Menace. So you grab one of these critters, and I'm going to. I said critter. We all know critter's coming, Jay. You know of critter. We all know of critter. One of my favorite words.
Yep, what try not to confuse them, Steve.
I know. What is the Menace?
Mm-hmm.
So, this bait, pushing, if we take the tail, you got the kind of the triple trident little tail in the back. And if you have that in your hand, just under 8 inches, right? Now, if you think about it, that's not that big of a bait. That's like your middle of the road musky baits. 8 inches, like a depth rater, right? And the whole goal of this and what has been achieved is something that you can throw in lieu of a bulldog, in lieu of a Medusa, and have a shad size profile or a panfish profile, because not every bite has to be those two baits. And if you look at jerk baits, we have Bulldog and we have Medusa, and we have everyone that is somewhere in and around that or some variation, whether it be a B52, which is Bulldog-esque, or, you know, a flat bottom like a Toothy, or, you know, you've got your other brands, you've got your Tackle Industries, which is just like a take on all this stuff, and it's like the same two forms. Well, if you fish shad-based, that sucker form and that kind of take on things is probably not the right profile, right? We say it all the time. What matters? Color doesn't matter. Size, profile. I wanted a shad-esque, a true baitfish profile, right? So a bulldog doesn't quite have the profile. It has the profile of maybe a sucker, or a Medusa might have more of that profile, opposed to I'm looking for crappie, shad, panfish, your bluegill, that kind of robust profile. So that's the first and foremost of like the aesthetic, right? Because you go, it's absolutely different. So yeah, the logic here, you got that fatter body, you've got that. Now you only go push an 8-inch bait. And to explain what's happening here, I hate most small rubber baits because they don't have a lot of weight to them, right? It's not, it, you, when you get small rubber baits, you end up with light rubber baits. So this thing's 7 and change, and it's 5 ounces. You throw the hook split rings on there. They come out of production. It's like says like 4-6. It's right there at 5. So you have over 2 feet a second of fall in free fall, which means when you rip this bait and you hesitate a second, it's picking up 2 feet. This is made to be worked hard. So you now have a small rubber bait that you can work aggressively. Because what happens if you get small rubber, you can't overwork it because it's not heavy enough, right? So this was provided, and the whole point for me was like, I need shad profile size, which is perfect for A, springtime, no matter where you're at, or if you're in shad-based water, Bay of Green Bay, all the way down here through the south, like, you know, all these different systems that have shad, or perch or crappie as a food source. That's what I'm going for, because we have that smaller profile, but we can work it just as aggressively. So pull pause bait, yes. My favorite way to work this is a tube follow-up, right? And I don't mean like you have to throw a tube. First, I go, if I'm considering to fish a Red October or a Kraken, but conditions are less than prime or early season, or it's a small forage base, because that is a problem. Guys fish bodies of water that do not have big forage. You need a bait that you can work in an aggressive manner. So I can work the menace just like I work a tube, up, down, and it's going to fall head down with all the twisty, turny. So you can pull it like a bulldog, pull paws. You can tap at it and get some glider-esque. If you watch the video, Jay's got those coming out this week. You're going to get left-right kick
with the
snaps. And then the way I like to work it is like a tube.
That was the first, that was when we fished protos last fall. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
That was the first thing you pointed out to me was like, check this out. And I'm doing this, you know, and I'm getting this kick, you know, on, but yeah, because we were probing deep weed lines. But yeah, please continue. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's just to solve a problem. Every bait I design is to solve a problem. And I'm telling you, because what's going to happen? The podcasters, you guys get the inside track every time. Everybody else goes, what do I do with this? Right? Great. I'm telling you guys, what I do with it, you'll figure out what else to do with it, because everybody adds to it. But again, I haven't had a bait that competently ran. I mean, it's the size of your hand, you know, and that's going to run where you need it to run. So this covers your downsized rubber, and it's not this spring dog mini Medusa crap that's running a foot under the surface that you can't really work. I don't want an extra rod. I don't need all this crap. So I'm able to work the menace aggressively throughout the season, killed on it this past year, been prototyping forever, and I'm able to work that just like I said, like a tube or a bulldog or a Medusa, and it's getting looks when nothing else will, which is kind of the key. And again, profile. We always talk about action size profile. Where's the profile in rubber that has the shad look, that has the right profile? So that's going to check the boxes there. And again, not to toot their own horn. This is the Menace is the bait that won bait of the year in Europe. I do all those trade shows, and yet again, that one kind of won it because it's so different. But go through them real quick, like I always do with the new bait release. Kind of covered all your bases for your color spectrum, right? Got a couple kind of smoke shows in there. You got Bottle Rocket and the 24 karat crappy. But, you know, obviously, we know I'm not a big collar guy. Show colors, Jay. Exclusive. No, I'm teasing. But you've got everything you kind of need there for clarity. And, hey, guess what, Jay? You got black and you got white. Can't go wrong there. where this is falling in the hierarchy of kind of musky fishing game plan is easy to work rubber, aggressive fall, and... For me, when I say, and you guys have always heard me, like, I've always respected, always liked and fished it for years, the alien eel, right? Like that bait. Love it. Really good at pull pause. It's not going to give me a head down look without changing out. So I wanted a bait that fit in that sub 12 inch category that is deep, that is aggressive, that I can work like a tube or I can work like a pull pause bait, or the smart guys are going to do both, right? And mix it up. And have that left to right that's going to trigger strike. So that is the Menace. Jay, anything to add there? What's your thoughts there?
No, nothing to add. I mean, you covered all the bases with that. Like you pointed out, we're going to have videos coming out throughout the week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of each bait. So with some really in-depth information on how to fish them and what they do and what they look like. So, you see this thing in the water, it's like, okay. You know, you'll figure it out. You'll figure out the applications. Yeah. And right. Yeah, I mean, everyone wants to, or if they don't want to, they should be fishing deeper at times. So here it is. Here simple it is. To do. Really and easy to use, too. You can't work it wrong.
No, and I'll tell you, it's not something a lot of the U.S. guys are going to do. So I kind of leaving that out. But the multi-tail kind of deal here, like the streamline multi-tail, on the Menace, excuse me, works well as a deep swim bait too, because you don't have to have a paddle. A lot of the European baits, you'll have a ribbon tail like that. And there's a guy that's on our pro staff named Fred Julian.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. So I've fished with Fred, and when I was over in Europe the last time, you know, I gave him some of the early ones, and that's what we talked about. So another application, you can literally take this. And it's got belly rock and belly roll just on a straight retrieve. And I'll tell you guys, screw it, I love talking about baits. I'll tell you guys the juice on this. Jay, you ready for the juice?
Mm-hmm.
Is the internal harness and the weights. And you remember the video, Jay, where we did all these videos where we cut up, or I cut up like a crazy person.
Yeah, saw plastic. Right.
Yeah. Here I'm on my kitchen table sawing up a couple $100 of new baits, and everybody's like, ah! But, you know, you look at the way the weights are designed, and it's kind of like nobody wants to quote-unquote break the mold. This is how you weight a bait. Nah, dog. It's time for something different. So this has a very different internal, what I would call a candy cane or a horseshoe shape to the weight. And you can feel it when you get the bait. If you feel the head of the bait, you're going to feel lead at the top and lead at the bottom. And it's about that placement. That's why you get the left-right action away from the boat. And that's, you know, so the internal components on this guy are as dialed in as any bait you're going to see, because that's kind of the juice behind that, of how you're able to get that and you get that erratic nature. I'll tell you, just being able to fish it, because a lot of people are going to get their hands on this stuff now, you will actually see a change, you know, on your leader material. If you want that really hard snap, you can use a straight wire leader and get kind of like this left and then fall.
I can see that.
You'll get left, right, fall, and it's pretty dynamic. So moving on, not to obsess, Jay. I got kind of nerd out here. So when they say go for it and they let you go nutty, this is what you do, folks. All right. No secret, Jay. No doubt. Nobody's questioned. Am I obsessed with crankbaits? Right?
Right.
There's no doubt there. And we endlessly go, okay, this, we like that, we like this, we like that. And how many times have we been asked, what are the quintessential crankbaits? You know, how many times over the years we've answered, you can only pick three, right? You can only have one, whatever
right,
it is, right?
Right, and we'll right. Go, for sure, well, get that like, a lot. Yeah.
Right. And again, it's not a budget thing, but it, from an angling standpoint, go, all right. You've got a handful of baits here, and it's like, okay, we're going to go with a slammer, or you're going to go with a crane, or you're going to go with this. Cool, great. And where I'm at, I've looked at musky crankbaits way too much, and this is how I go, and if I'm boring you, I apologize. But I'm sitting here in the bait cave, you know, and I'll stare at the wall, and I'll look at my crankbaits. I go, okay. That crankbait came out before I was born, and that one came out five years. You know, that's not new. That, and you kind of look at that. To be honest with you, I think musky crankbaits have been stifled, and I was like, okay, there's room for improvement. They didn't nail everything 30 years ago, right? It wasn't perfect. And thought about that, and I went, well, what do I want? And then this is just the thought process behind it. I'm going, how do I modify my crankbaits? And so moving forward and just skip all the struggle bus, which is I end up at the Banshee, which does what all of the working on articles and trying to like get dialed in crankbaits, Jay. Well, yeah. Get this bait and do all this to it, and then you'll have the right bait, right? How many times have you read those articles? Put plumber's tape on it. Put change the hooks. Do this.
Right.
Good point. Right. Why am I buying this when I got to do all kinds of shit to it to get it to do what it should do?
Yeah, I got to spend more money and time
right.
modifying the darn thing to get it to do what I want.
You great. Said the operative word, the T word, time. And that's where I was going. It's funny. So I got every crankbait in the world times five hanging in the bait cave. And I'm going, okay. And what a lot of people don't realize guiding or, you know, I got guiding. I got all the crap I'm doing, making baits. I got all the other stuff I'm doing. I'm busy. Jay knows that. It's like time is my enemy. And I go, oh, I don't want to fool with this. I don't have time to get those baits running the way I want them or this, that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have a free evening to go down to the pond and screw around with it.
That's why you have baits in your boat that are marked to do certain things. Run the way you want. Yeah.
And
predetermined with time and effort.
Right. That's how I got to Banshee. So I'm sick of screwing with it. I want a bait that comes out of the pack that's ready to kick ass. I don't need to change the hooks. And I'm not bashing crankbaits. You go, some of them, you go, well, the hooks are a little bit. Or this, or they don't do that. And I went, and this is not your shallow twitch bait. This is not a shallow twitch bait. But I went, there's things that can be done. So what do we know that triggers musky strikes? A, left to right action. Let's start there. We know that the side profile will get bit, right? Correct. We know that'll get bit. We know micro movements and things that happen as a bait's moving, like rubber. That's where rubber works. You've got extra undulation, all this stuff. I put everything that I knew, everything that I wanted into one bait. So with the Banshee, you take it out of the package, you throw it out, you reel it down, you stop it. Depending on your altitude and salinity, right? Because different times you have different water temperatures, you have different buoyancy. The Banshee is on the cusp of dead suspending to a death rise, death pulse.
Whoa, say that twice? Huh?
It is what? Based on what? The altitude and salinity? What?
I caught part of that.
Yeah. What was that? So. Depending on what your altitude and the salinity of your water comp, actually colder water baits suspend better. I don't know if you're aware of that, but that's a whole other animal. So based on your leader choice and all this stuff. Now I fish in general, 130 pound, 12 inch fluoro. You fish a little bit heavier, it'll be even slower. So kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul on the float back aspect of the Banshee. Mm-hmm. It is a suspending death pause right out of the pack. You throw it out there and you crank it up, you will see it stop. Instead of rising from the rear of the bait, it rises head up. And it catches itself and it rises funky, backs up, and it doesn't rise like a normal crankbait. So you could literally throw it out there reel, and stop, and it's going to hang, it's going to pulse, right? So you're not modding baits trying to get this quote-unquote suspending bait. It is a suspending crank for muskies right out of the box. The only other ones that exist like that are very expensive customs or far larger baits, right? So this, and let's talk about that, it's a 4-inch body. This is a 4-inch thick crankbait for muskies, built for muskies, that actually suspends at that size.
Yep.
Which doesn't exist, right? This is not another crankbait. So it is a suspending crankbait. When I hear suspending crankbait, I go suspending jerkbait. This goes back so hard for me on some videos and some thoughts that I've had over the years and how I fish. There's a video Jay and I did, went out and filmed it, about suspending crankbaits. The classic is the Triple D. Catches a lot of muskies, right? It's a slow suspending or slow rise death pulse crankbait. It's an 8.5-inch bait. It's a bigger
profile. It's a big bait and it pulls hard.
This doesn't. Mm-hmm. So when do we need suspension and death pulse and slow rise? When conditions are poor, more often than not. When we're not power fishing. Now you have a small 4-inch body. You add the soft tail. You got a bigger profile, right? That suspends. You can crank it down and get it to them. The video you're going to see on this thing that is, you're going to wear it out when you see it, because I've seen it so much that it's like I forget that others haven't. When you see the left to right action on this bait, this is not a quote unquote bait that kind of glides. This is a gliding crankbait.
Yeah.
I don't mean, Jay, you've seen it. It's not like, yeah, it's a gliding crankbait. The way I fish this bait, in really bad conditions, throw it out, reel it down a couple times, and I work it like a glide bait. And on my pauses, it's not falling, it's death pausing.
Yeah, and it's got a soft tail.
Right, which
that just doesn't exist in the crankbait market. That's just another pointer. Yeah.
Yeah, this was a hard bait to make, and I needed it. That's why it exists. I wanted it, so now you can buy it. And I have worn their ass out on this thing. I've worn from Canada to everywhere. I've worn their ass out, because when they follow in blades, throw this out, whack, 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 gunk. They won't eat this. They won't eat that. Get their attention. Tippy tappy, right? Downsize for cold fronts, early season, small profile. Again, this is a small profile bait. But when you think of small musky crankbaits, you think of baits like a Lungeon 22 short or a Shallow Raider, that size bait, right?
Yeah.
They're pretty one-dimensional. This is not in the same conversation as those baits. I'm not saying it's better. I'm not saying there's worse. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm saying this is a different animal entirely. Again, the soft tail, which allows you can actually remove the soft tail if you want to small up the profile. You can add a bigger grub. You can do all kinds of stuff there.
Yeah, and it still operates good. That's the thing. A lot of people have side note here, a lot of people have experimented, I'm talking about manufacturers, with their product to adding soft tails to it. You know, like Big Fork, for example, on the Sandcats. How come you don't have a soft tail? Get them to run right. They won't. That's not the way they're designed. This thing, designed around with the soft tail, works perfect. It glides, and there's a lot more to it. I'm sure you'll cover that too.
Well, I know, and I'm not trying to beat you guys. This is like you need to know, because it's going to solve your problems. I mean it, because I was just sick of shitty crankbaits. With the thing with that soft tail, by the way, it's the same system as the Titan where it screws on a corkscrew. So it's super easy to replace. You're not gluing that on.
No glue. Thank you.
Right, which is, I'm so, you know, well, if you look at it, I mean, my goodness, it's like from Titan and Titan Junior. That's like a feature. But the screw-on tails you usually see on higher-end baits. So that's kind of like a nice feature when it's wet and it's raining and you can't glue a tail on. Anyway, so on this thing, what you'll notice is, again, the left to right action. Now, that is on a slack line. You will get slashing with it if you're pulling on it like without slack, but I'm talking just bit of slack in there will get your really definitive left to right. Okay. Walking in place, which is a term we hear all the time. You're getting left to right in a tight path. Now, if you're smart about it, you walk, and then make it bounce in place. If fish are really, really negative or neutral, or you're getting follows, and I talk about mid-cast triggers, that is the main concept with this. You're fishing tiger muskies, you can't get them to eat. You're fishing negative neutral fish, you walk it like a glide bait with the mid-cast trigger and let it bounce in place, it's going to get ate. Because other baits just can't simply do that. Other things you'll see in the video. You can take this bait and you can rip it as hard as you rip a freaking pounder.
Yeah, it's true.
And
Doesn't blow out.
So, was that the initial design? No, it's a hell of a byproduct. Because it's so stable in the water, you can pull, pause it, throw it out, rip, pause, and it's a suspending pause. So you have this big surge, right? And then a pause. Surge, and then a pause. So that's just killer. Now, before we get any further on that, there is a removable weight on the bottom if you want a buoyant version. So everything I'm saying you can do with this, there's a small weight in the bottom. You take it out with a screwdriver, and then you have a fast rise, which is just insanity. So you have two versions of the bait. Anyway, so much. And I could belabor any of these for an hour and a half just to try to explain to people what they're looking at here. What's killer on this bait? And again, it was not the initial design, but what came from such a long design process. I'm talking like 3 years of hard design. I don't mean like, oh, I had the idea 3 years ago. I mean like 3 years of actively tweaking this bait. This is a bad mofo. The trolling capabilities of the Banshee are off the chain, right? You look at, and I've mentioned it before, but you look at like a supernatural big bait with the left to right wonder. The Banshee has a left to right wonder because it has a gliding nature. So on a straight troll or on a straight cast, if you burn it, you'll actually see the bait hunt left to right. So as you're trolling, you actually have a 4-inch body with a soft tail that hunts left to right. This is a devastating trolling bait. It wasn't designed to be. Once I saw the capabilities, we actually changed the line attachment angle to make it even better. It's like, okay, can we make this perfect? Because you kind of saw the diamond in the rough there. So it's been tweaked onto the design. So whether you're using it, like I said, as a jerk bait, glide bait, then you can turn it around and it freaking trolls like a mother, Jay. And that's the thing. Jay actually didn't. You got to see it this past year. Jay was the first person to see the clear prototypes on this. And we go out on the water, and I'm like, okay, watch this, Jay, and get that sucker up to 5. So you have a bait that is that size that you can do 5 miles an hour with a side-to-side wonder. What more do you want? Are you not entertained, Jay? Like he says in Gladiator.
Mark my words, Banshee will be a game changer. I'm telling you, that thing is going to catch a ton of fish for a lot of people because it is so absolutely versatile.
If you know what you're doing, and that's why this is why I'm telling you. So you get first crack at these, and we're right there about fishing time, so you understand. You don't need to spend the whole. I mean, obviously, the cool thing is people always come up with new ways, new applications. But I'm trying to give you guys the jump start on what I'm doing with these guys. So right out of the gate, you have a huge advantage. Right? Because like you're saying, and I mean, how many freaking musky crankbaits are there? 1 million.
Yeah.
And this wasn't designed to sell a bunch of pieces. This was designed as a weapon. This is a tool and a half. So, and again, when it comes to collars, got your basics. Now they get a little more custom-y. I went over the deep end and did that ink color, which is one of my favorite paint jobs I've ever done, just because it's like a Rorschach test. And they let me do weird things now, Jay. That's the joy of doing what I do. But you got your stuff in there. You got your Skinwalker. There's no myths in there. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of just a layout for every condition there.
Yeah.
What else?
Price is great, too.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
$24. Give me a break. It's like they're. That's the cool thing, guys, with Livingston is, and I'm not sure tooting their own horn, but I'm. It makes it a lot easier for me to work with them when it's actually affordable shit. I mean, they dropped the price on I mean, they didn't need to, but because tariffs actually changed a little bit in the imports, like Mustang, they're like, okay, they're dropping it by like a buck for this year. And it's not, they sell the hell out of them. They're like, okay, we're doing more volume, drop it. So they're actually pricing, they're trying to make it more affordable and all that stuff where they deal with the big retailers. But anyway, last but not least, Jay, on the new bait rundown. Right. This is essentially, well, think about it. There's not much. I mean, there's small stuff that matriculates in over the year, but as far as big releases, you're getting the inside skinny here. Again, the last but not least, and definitely the weirdest of the bunch.
Weirdest. Okay.
Is Critter. So yeah. What is this? Some might say. And I remember at ICAST this year, this is the first time anybody saw them at all. And they're like, what the hell do you do with that?
You get a lot of, whoa.
Yeah. And then the guys that get it. And then we brought them up to the bash and people were like, oh yeah. And so the Critter is probably the smallest true kind of like musky bait that's kind of got a lot going on here. So what are the final specs? I always forget final specs here. 3.5 inch body, 3 ounces, right? I've said it before, it's a weaponized sinker. So the Critter has 2 feet per second fall rate with those two tiny little blades. And when you see this bait, Jay, those blades on the back are, they're walleye-sized blades. They're not even musky-sized blades.
Yeah, they're little number fours or something, I'm guessing. Yeah, and something like that.
What you end up with this is a bait that you can, from the most basic standpoint, you can take this thing, cast it out, turn the handle. Now you have a bait with two rear blades and a paddle tail fin on the top that is making a really funky vibration with a tiny little profile. 3-inch something profile, right? Killer follow-up, killer alternative to where you would fish rattle traps or like 500-size bucktails. So, you Eagle River guys, you Three Lakes, all these high-pressure waters in the early seas, when everybody and their brother's going to be throwing a 500-size bucktail, throw this out there and see how stupid they get on it. They lose their minds, Jay. There's nothing like it. It's like, what? They just hog this thing. And the small-size applications, the downsize applications people get, yes, it's killer as a follow-up tick as a castback. Yes, it's killer for an alternative to small bucktails. You know, forget rattle traps. It's a great alternative to that. The entire intent of this was not to have the tiny little follow-up bait or a spring bait. This is to fix your wagon, to fix your problems, Jay, when it gets bad. So if you fish on a small fish fishery, this thing's money. Early season, it's money. Cast back, it's money. But the real sleeper on this is how freaking deadly this thing is around high vegetation. And what I did with it this summer, I think we talked about it on the podcast once before, but just dig if you will this picture, Jay. Nasty Canadian cold front, right? And in Canada, all you throw is big stuff. You got to throw big, 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 big. Taking this thing, turning the handle twice, then letting it fall for a second. Turn the handle twice, let it fall, and it getting smoked over and over and over again around vegetation. Because the way it falls and the way the hooks are arranged, it can fall right into a clump of weeds pretty dang clean. You rip it back up, coming out clean, right? So taking it and doing the pickpocket stuff we've always talked about, where you only have a few options. You can't pick pockets in a weed bed with a bucktail. You can't. You can do it with a spinnerbait, and that's about it. So for picking pockets around weeds, fantastic. For throwing at high cabbage and letting it fall, it's money. And yet again, my favorite way to work it is with the turn, pause. which gives it a tube-like action. So it's actually going to surge up and down, and you'll see it in the video. This thing snaps its head up and falls nose down. It's a straight vertical fall. So there's not a lot of tiny baits. You know, what is it, 5.5 overall maybe, even with the blades, that you have that have an aggressive fall. And this, like the Menace, and they're kind of brother and sister here, where you have rubber presentations that are small, that have aggressive rates of fall that are actually heavy enough to be effective. So, you know, my years of screwing around with spring dogs and crap like that are just done, right? Or this small rubber, or even like a standard size bulldog, forget it, because I need the action, especially in the modern day live scope. If you fish open water, or you're seeing this stuff, you need the stuff to get down, right? And you notice we need deeper running stuff quite often. But with Critter, it's one of these things, if you don't understand it, don't get it. But if you have a clue, you'll be all over this thing. It just absolutely solves that problem of, like, you can take it and you can put it on a kid's rod and he can catch a muskie. Or you can put it on your rod and use it. What it's meant for is like probing pockets in weeds, throwing it next to timber and letting it fall, and then snapping it up and having that up and down tube-like motion in a really small package. In a really small package is just freaking deadly.
Mm-hmm.
It's that it's just such a, like I said, all three of these, nobody ever does three releases at the same time ever. And I just wanted them. So
it's the ultimate trifecta.
Well, I mean, not even from the standpoint of, hey, get them. It just solves the problems that we have right now, where I go, give me a shad profile, give me a crankbait that does, you know, I just expect more out of baits anymore with like Banshee, you know, with Critter, there's nothing like it. And it's like, okay, getting my system down where you go, okay, I've got my 10 inch Magnus, I've got my 7 inch, you know, and this kind of completes, to be honest with you, a lot of the way I fish, where it's like rounding things out. We're like, you got it. And we can cover, you know, like I'm always pounding on. I mean, we need to be in proximity of the fish. And there's not enough small baits that'll get down and dirty. They just won't without doing a bunch of crap to them. And that's why these exist. Right. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. So Tuesday, books, check them out. You know, not trying to browbeat you or sell you on them, just tell you about it, and they launch out there and they'll be on the shop. Yay.
Yeah, check out the videos. Yeah, Critter video comes out Monday at noon.
If you can't tell, I'm cool. Like a doting father, Jay. Every time the new baits come out, I'm like, oh,
it's just my baby. He's my boy.
My boys. I know, it's so strange every time. Like, I've been taking them to that last trade show is at, and you know, you get to this point when you make something,
and you just say to the guy, "Don't touch it.
Don't touch.
Don't
it.
Even
That's
look at it."
That's where it starts. Like, you don't, like, when I first had the Critter was the first one that was completed. The one I made, like the handmade ones, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, I don't want anybody to have this. And I didn't send it off for about a month. Because, like, this is so freaking good, you know what I'm saying? And it was, like, so different. And using that, like, what I call a tail gunner bait or a tail spin bait, you know, because you'll see some of this in the bass world where they'll have a tail spin bait. And my first muskie I picked up on Critter, I was just working it like a tube. You know, with up rips of the rod, not super hard, right? It's not that heavy, but just like up rips. It's like, okay, he annihilated that. And then you just start exploring from such just maximum versatility here, where I've caught one working like a tube on the Critter. I've caught one vertically jigging. I had to see if I could do it on the vertical jig.
You can burn these things if you want to. You can burn them in straight. You know, the old rattle trap spring thing, you know, that everyone's probably well aware of, you know, that is such a tactic in many parts of the country. It's like, just burn throw it out a Critter and burn it as fast as you want. And it's going to run at depth.
It's just weird because you go through that thing of like, oh, but every time I just remind myself I've had the, I've had them for long enough. We'll get them out there in the world. Now the banjo, I'll admit, Jay, when I got that done and I knew it worked, I've never melted something off faster in my life because, like, I was afraid if I looked at it wrong, it wouldn't work anymore. You know what I'm saying?
You're okay.
It took me so long to get it right. You know, that one was so freaking hard. So anyway, guys, check them out. I haven't steered you wrong yet. Check them out there. Let's hit some Q&A. Ben, what's going on, fellas? I can't help but appreciate the six-minute music intro we had a couple podcasts ago. It's truly wonderful. My question today is about sonar and why you guys feel will be the best for me. I'm having a hard time deciding between Mega 360 or Mega Live. I know they each have their own benefits, so I want to know what you guys think would be the best for muskies. I'm planning on running a head unit with a transducer for side imaging and mapping and a second unit with 360 or live, but I can't decide which one will be the best. 360 or live imaging?
360's got a good ring to it.
It does. That's a solid ring. It's a solid ring. I like, for some reason, it resonates.
That's what I'm saying.
I would say, I'll be honest with you, man. At this point, the live imaging thing, I've had so many conversations with people, whether it's good to integrate in their plan or not. But with the 360 live, I mean, it's depends on how much you're going to hammer on either of them, right? Because with live scope, it can become just addictive for people. They're just addicted to staring at that screen and it screws up how they're fishing. I would probably, because of the way things are going, I would probably go with the live, right? But make sure, if you get the live, now you have all the other pitfalls to watch out for and don't let it, like, ruin your skill level. But I think as things adapt, that would probably put you in a better position for the next wave of things to come. Does that make sense? Because you don't want to go from, Jay, it's like if you had a flip phone, you have a flip phone, and you go from a flip phone to, like, the newest iPhone, right? Whoa, big shocker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the next iterations of things are going to be focused on kind of that mega series. I think everything's taking a tip towards the live, so you'll probably be more in the fold for the next gen after that or the next couple gens. Right?
Do you think it's evolving into operator use too?
Have you seen?
Or is that going to, yeah.
No, I'm talking about, like, dude, they have, I was with my buddy Mike, you know, we went on a little fishing around with his girl and stuff and all this, and he had hit me to, like, Lowrance has their live imaging now that you can stitch together, like, multiple units, and it's basically what you're going to end up with is, like, live imaging 360, like, real-time kind of crap on fire is what it's looking like, where, oh, you have a, you know, 240 degree live scope view. And so all the companies, all the tech they're coming out with now is more live driven. Right. That's why I'm telling him, because, like, if you have to pick one for one or the other, I would go for the live scope ecosystem or the live imaging ecosystem, because that is more predictive of what's coming next. Right. So if you're acclimated or you have an understanding of that, and I say it from an interpretation standpoint, right? Fish finders and what you're seeing and what you get out of them is so much data interpretation. I would start speaking the live imaging language before I'd start speaking that Mega Live 360 language. Right? So, because you got to realize, and I'm not saying perspective view, but it's a different perspective from the viewer's place of how they're seeing the world through that screen. That's why I'm saying I'd go with the live version, because it seems as if everything else is going to tilt that way, right? You don't. Is it making sense, Jay? Am I getting my point across? Like, there's no reason to go learn a dying language, right? There's no reason, like, you know, if you want to.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. So if he already has side scan and he's got that, if he has side scan and live imaging, I would go towards the live imaging, because that's going to be kind of the language that continues or the motif that continues, opposed mm-hmm. to the other systems are dying and you would be interpreting a dead language. I'd be getting
sure.
Okay. Wes, hey y'all, sent you a question through the app. Doesn't need to be read or answered on the podcast, but I have to. Well, I guess we're doing it regardless. Sorry. And he goes on to say that we do a great job. Thank you. He's from Ohio, been a bass fisher most of his life. I'm skipping a bunch here to other worlds. Musky guys seem to be willing to help. Here's a question. Oh, how can you? Okay. He wants to know how you can send a story. This is a good one. If you're not, that you can actually submit a picture on the app from the Musky 360 user photos. Go to the My 360 tab on the side of the app there for you. There, you hit that, right? You hit My 360. Now, we got all the cool stuff in here. You got your moon. You got all your fun stuff, right? And if you go down, Musky 360 submissions, and it can share a picture, you can share a video, or you can share the text. You can share both. So if you have a picture and a small story you want to share about it, send the picture, and then subsequently do come back and do a rejoiner, and you can and send that to the app. And his next question, I'm trying to learn water. He's wanting to be a lot more efficient with his time. I've listened to your podcast in the early episode. Joe talks about maps, carving them up, and mentioned looking for main points. Okay. So, great, great lesson here in this whole thing. So, what we're talking about and what has been mentioned in other episodes and something that's always good to refresh, and it's probably about that time of year to do it. Jay, remind me next week. We should probably, let's get... Jay, you never remember, and I never remember. But next week, maybe, if I'm filling up for it, maybe we let's do a mapping refresher, maybe a structural refresher, because it's always worth it. But
okay,
when we're color coding maps and we're looking at things, we're trying to identify zones. Now, the Bucherism of it, and the way you used to do it at old school Musky shows, to answer your question, is color 0 to 12. Right, 0 to 12 provides you what's called the littoral zone. That is the zone where vegetation most commonly grows. That is also mm-hmm. your shallow water zones, right? And when you color this zone with a crayon back in the day, you would see the map differently. Now, modern, what I recommend that we do is we break it down into a few different color bandwidths in that small zone. Right, so on my fish finder... I think I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know like it's red is 0 to 4, right? 4 to 8 is orange. And then it goes to, or it's like, yeah, it's like red, orange, yellow. And then when I get into shades of blue, it looks like a Rastafarian flag, right? Amen. But having these multiple bands of color on my fish finder with depth change allows me to instantly introduce new zones. Like, okay, I'm seeing muskies in 7 to 8 feet of water, 9 feet of water. Okay, well, that's an orange band bite. Now, what structure subdivides that? So once we have a color code for our map, now we can look at structure and the interplay between depth and structure. So color coding allows us to quickly, in a visual manner, break down three-dimensional structures and their depth. Right? So you don't have to visualize mentally as much what's happening with a point, because he's asking about main lake points, which a point, he's wanting to know what we're discussing when we say main lake points. You will see fingers of soil, the actual bathymetry, for lack of a better term, the topography, the bottom of the lake coming off of a shoreline or out of nowhere and extending, extruded out to the lake. That would be a point, right? And the subsurface portion of that point has a variance in depth from right when it hits the waterline, which would be the zero mark, down to the term of the contact point, where that structure can no longer be differentiated from the main basin. Everything between point A, where it becomes submerged, and point B, the contact point, everything's at play. Now, it helps us to understand how that structure is broken up into bands of depth, so we are able to dial in even further. Right? So that's what's taking place with there. So color coding your map. I'll say this because the last dude was asking about electronics. Jay, I'll tell you. I mean, I think the number one thing for me with any fish finder purchase, and I don't want to do it, but I'll be due. I'm pretty due here before too long with fish finders. But, you know, for me with the fish finders is ensuring that my fish finder can break a map down in different color bands. That's like the number one thing. Now, different mapping cards are going to allow you to do that, right? There's certain map chips that will do it, certain map chips that won't. But I think the most important thing that you can do is ensuring that your fish finder can do that competently. What we got here, Jay? What do you got? Huh? What do you got? I'm looking here. I just closed my inbox. Half of these people's questions go to spam. What's wrong with you people? What are you doing with your emails?
Sometimes they come in with a phone number, you know, straight to spam if that's the case. Is
everybody a spammer? Oh, Sean, appreciate the podcast. Shout out to the Muskie Shop and the turnaround on the baits. I was shocked how fast I received them. Anyways, cool. You do a podcast on water temperature, time of year, and what baits to throw. Every one of these, Sean, is that. There's no carte blanche answer on that, though. See, that is one of the biggest things that people look for. You go, and that's, and again, not trying to pitch you a book, but goodness, should have been done this week. But of course, this is like new bait week from hell, which you guys don't, like, Jay understands what I'm saying by that. Of like, oh, I got to do a thing with tackle tray. You got to do so much. It's ridiculous when you're with this, but it'll be there. We'll be there very, 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 very shortly. But when it comes to water temperature, it's one of these deals where water temperature is not the end-all be-all. Seasonality is not the end-all be-all. Weather is overarching, but it's how that we read the water and the conditions, because there's no really general rule that will get you where you want to be. Right, gross generalities are like, yeah. You know, sneakers are better to wear than cleats while playing basketball, right? But you know, and it's not a bad question or a bad thought at all. I'm just not going to be the guy that says when it's 72, do this, because that's bullshit, right? So the answer is actually learning how to think less than looking for the exact temperature. Right, or this, that, and the other. You can't fish by the calendar. When you hear say, don't worry about what the calendar says, or don't fish by the calendar, that's it, because you get caught in this trap. So, working on that in the new book, but just delve in. The biggest
The water temps thing is very impactful very early in the season and very late in the season. Yeah. That's where it truly dictates metabolism, speed and with all that considered. But yeah, throughout the regular course of the season, it's just one of the components.
Gary, hello Jay and Steven, love the show. Can I safely spool my musky reels with 80 pound braid with a 20 pound fluoro backer, and can I do it early before the season with no worries? Gary's got cabin fever. Is it safe to do it fresh now, and is a 20 pound fluoro backer a good deal? What do we think?
If you got 20 pound fluorocarbon you're using as backer underneath your main line, sure. Yeah, I mean, we use 20 pound mono, 25 pound mono, depending on what we can get our hands on. That's prime, that's primo, because anything thicker than that or thinner than that diameter wise is kind of hard to tie to the line. You don't want to use 10 pound mono. It's such low diameter. So 20 works great. It's pliable enough. You can tie that little loop knot. What do you call it? What do I call it? Nail knot? Not a nail knot.
Blood clinch knot.
I don't know what it is. Blood knot. Yeah, it's a line to line knot that works very well, and there's different ways to do it. But
I got a secret.
Look it up
for that.
Online, and yeah, they work really good with 20 pounds. So yeah, that'll work just fine.
I got a secret knot for braid to backing, Jay.
I'm sure you do.
It's just a real shitty overhand knot because you're never going to get down to it. So I'm just warning you.
Shortcut.
I don't want to fool with it. I'm not getting out doing some getting out my graph of, okay, guys, this is the no. I tie like two overhand knots and go, well, if I get down to backing, I'm screwed. You're never going to, they don't run that hard. The one thing, and it's just of note, you're getting ready for the season, regardless of who you are, and it's time to spool up. Everybody does it where they get lazy. I'm not going to put backing on. Backing is crucial with this braid because it's slippery. You have to have that soft material underneath it so it grips. Yep. That's the key. And so having a pad of backing, and again, having backing to just, I mean, for me, I'm going a smidge under half a spool of backing. Don't waste a bunch of braid, right? We're not fishing whale sharks here, folks. You're not going to need it, right? So conserve some braid, put the backing on there, you know, don't be afraid. I mean, you don't want to be half and half, but save yourself some line there. You know, it just does you the right. Service.
Yeah, in most cases, you don't need over 100 yards of main line, mm-hmm. you know, on a musky reel. Trolling reels can be an exception, but yeah, you know.
We got Mike.
Third of the way up, depending on it. Yeah, go ahead.
We got two questions here, Jay. Number one, why can I only catch muskies on black lures? Right? And secondly, every once in a while, I have an evening where I'll have a bunch of follows and see multiple muskies, but nothing commits. What am I supposed to throw? Am I supposed to do a throw, change up bait, or change my cadence? What do I need to do? So, two things. He can only catch them on black baits thus far. And what do I do when we have followers? Well, something regarding color, right? Color doesn't matter, but profile silhouette matters, right? Look at what you're throwing, because what are your black baits? And I've seen this with people. Now, we can go down a mega rabbit hole, or we can keep it linear. Let's keep it linear for a second. You cannot make an A-B comparison unless you have an A-B, right? You can't compare a green chartreuse glide bait to a black bulldog and say color matters. Make sure that you're throwing one for one, right? Pick on my own stuff. Don't compare a black Titan to a white Titan. Or excuse me, you could compare, right? But you can't compare like the different, you have to have two of the same baits or at least multiple profiles. You see what I'm saying? So don't go, and if you got to look at your tackle collection, go, oh, well, the baits that I'm throwing, it's not about color. It's about what baits I have of a color, right? Because
fish on black bucktails and, you know, buddy's not catching fish on fire tiger
shad wraps,
bulldogs, yeah,
right,
or experiments, right. Not set up right, yeah,
right. You have to have some control in there, so make sure like when you're making that assessment that it's a logical read, right? So look at what your black baits are. Now if every bait you have is black, guess what, that's that's just because everything you throw is black. Now look at your black baits that you throw and go, what am I throwing that is not black, that's not working where I'm at? And you can assess and kind of get a better grasp on it. So look at it from that fashion. Now, what it could be is seasonality, time of day, things of that nature, right? Or when you're choosing to fish, or simply that a hard profile, a hard silhouette is important in the water that you're fishing. But make sure, don't just throw it up to color, because it's so often, I just beat on color on the podcast, but it is so in just tiny, 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 rare that color matters, because people will go, well, this is the hot color. And you're going, okay, you're throwing a custom crane bait that's, you know, monkey fart rainbow, right? And you're comparing that to your red October tube in white that's not catching fish. They couldn't be further apart. Right, so if we're considering color, make sure that you're seeing a genuine difference in bites and strikes and follows within the same bait class, preferably before I go down there, within the same family, within the same brand, right? Because I'm not going to buy that, okay, a Hellhound in X, Y, and Z color is outproducing a Phantom in X, Y, and Z color if we're not comparing. You see what I'm saying? You have to make a, have a direct comparison. Like if it's black bait versus black bait, you got my attention. But if it's black bait versus, you know, monkey sparkle topwater, it's different. So make sure we're doing that. As far as you're getting a bunch of follows and nothing commits, the first thing that always pops into my head to consider, if we're getting follows and are not committing, how good is your eight? That's number one place we have to improve, right? So it's years I've dealt with. I get them in the eight and I don't catch them. Well, is it the fish or is it you? Right? You've got to be realistic and go, do I need to work on something? It is rare, you know, for me, for anybody that's doing this nonstop, doing it for a living, it is rare that it is the fish. It's fun to blame the fish. It's easier to blame the fish. But quite often, there's a breakdown in our mechanics or we are not executing.
Right. Quite often, there is a way to make them eat. Yeah.
And not always. But far less than we want. It's way easier to just say they're not eating than be introspective, right? So if you're serious about it and you really want to go make some correction, you're not going to get them all. I don't get them all. Nobody gets them all. But if you want to break it down, go, why is this happening? You need to compare, you know, what am I doing versus what are pros doing? Why are they doing that? What am I not doing? What could I do better? Right? And the devil's in the details right there. Are you leaving too much line out before you start your eight? Is the begin, and this is a kiss of death with figure eights a lot of times, is the beginning of my figure eight a shitty transition or is it just silky smooth? Do I come in and it's like, oh, they're time to figure eight again? Or is it subconscious and it's just part of what you do? That's a huge improvement. Once you get
for
there,
sure.
Yeah,
for
once
sure.
we get yep. there, now we got something to work with. Are they wide enough? Right? Am I providing turning radius for fish? I still have the conversation. Why do you fish such a long 9'6" rod? Because it allows turning radius and it gives me a physical advantage in the figure eight. Right? I have to bend less, I have widening turning radius, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So are we creating width in the figure eight? Now, maybe his problem's not in the eight. We go, all right, cool. He's got a completely serviceable figure eight. Everything's kosher. There's no issues there. There's no glaring holes in the figure eight game. Getting follows and they're not committing. Are we not changing things up during the retrieve? Or is every retrieve boring? Are you getting the... Because you think we got 80 feet. And here's what happens when people muskie fish. They go, I have the right bait on. I am in the right area. So you've listened to all the structured podcasts. You've read Next Level Muskie Fishing. You're living, breathing, eating it. Ah, I got it figured out. I'm where muskies are. Okay. And I've got the right size profile action of bait on. Now you have to do the physical part. And I actually talked about this. Like I said, I'm not trying to harken back, but it's something of note because I've kind of harped on this previous on a podcast. Of you can have all the brains in the muskie game. You can have all the brains. You know, here I am, Mr. Science. I have it figured out. Right? You get all the thinking parts done, but you have to do the physical aspect, which makes it makes this interesting. It's like chess with boxing, Jay. Have you seen where you have chess? And you move, the guys do like half a game of chess and they stand up and box each other and then play chess again. Have you seen this? It's amazing.
No.
Well, it exists. No, you need to get deeper on YouTube.
Okay.
Russian night fights, number one. Have you not seen this? This shit is the bomb.
So they don't call it Fight Club. They call it Chess Club.
No.
In Russia.
What you're missing out on is a bunch of like 10 versus 10 Russian gang fights, number one.
Okay.
Number two, Russian knight fights where they get in freaking medieval armor with blunted weapons and beat each other to crap. Right?
Right.
And then you have just chess boxing. So there's that. They play a little chess, they fist fight a little bit. They play a little chess, they fist. There's two ways to lose, either a checkmate or a knockout. It's beautiful. But
you know, Jake Smith does that too in his free time from Smitty Bates.
Right, but it's like solitaire though. He just he just plays solitaire and punches himself in the face.
Okay.
So just tell me and listen if you need some brain rot content, all that stuff.
Well, I'm looking it up. I'm looking it up. Yeah, as soon as we get done.
Oh, sure. The Russian night fights are my favorite thing.
Anyway, that sounds wonderful.
It's ridiculous. Not something I do often, but it's a guilty pleasure. Nonetheless, what I'm saying is if you got the mental game down, you got to have the physical game down. And the physical game is about articulating baits and not getting lazy with it, not schlumping on any cast. So you got 80 feet. You make the cast to our target zone. Here comes the bait. We're doing the thing with the bait. We're doing something. We've got their attention, right? Hopefully we got their attention in the first 40 feet of the cast. If you're dialed in, you got their attention in the first 15. Now we start thinking about actionable moments throughout that cast until we get back to boat side. It's not about losing a follow. It's about triggering a strike. And that's where most people are lost. Right? That's when you go, all right, a dialed in angler goes, I know that they are sitting here. Either from experience from that day, context clues, context, or being that dialed in. We know that the bandwidth they're in is X, Y, and Z. I know they are there. My confidence is unshakable. Therefore, I know my cast are engaging them relatively early in the cast. Therefore, I have the longest amount of time possible to create moments of engagement. How do we create moments of engagement? We're adding in triggering moments. When you hear me say you need a mid-cast trigger with every retrieve, if you're dialed in, you want two. Preferably three, you're doing something with that bait. You're creating moments of hesitation. Now, it's when a musky presentation becomes jazz, Jay. Hate jazz. But jazz musicians are annoying. They'll just throw in, they'll be playing in E major and throw in some Mixolydian scale bullshit that'll make your skin crawl. And you go, that's not music, that's dog crap, right? But a jazz musician's willing to do that. And they call it jazz. Jazz is not music. Jazz is crap. But you can write that down. Put that on my tombstone. Great quotes, right?
Well, but, if you don't know how to read music, you don't know how to read music.
Exactly. It's like, jazz is like, three of them are reading it the right side up, and the fourth guy's got the shit upside down. But
it does appear that way at times.
Right.
Yeah. I was well-trained in jazz as a youngster.
I bet you were. jazzy.
Things you got to learn, man.
Jazzy J.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what I'm getting at is this jazz, the whole reason I'm saying this is like, okay, here's the thing. Here's the music going around. And here's the weird note. Or here's the weird lick. Mm-hmm. You can't be afraid to do that. Right? And to the musky retrieve world, the easiest way to tie the craziness I just said to what is actionable in your world as a musky angler. Glide baits. I got left, right. Left, right. It's right in time. One, two, three, four, five, two, right?
Oh, right, but we're not always in 4/4 time,
right,
Steve.
That's where I'm going.
There
you go.
Bingo.
The trigger is the jazz. Give it the jazz. Give it some English. Do something. Because glide baits are the best way, if you're not an idiot like me or have Asperger's and just ramble of the mouth, the example is don't get a retrieve that is so predictable. And like Jay said, it's right there in 4/4. It's so smooth. right? Don't be Kenny G. Be Charles Mingus.
Or Led Zeppelin. Or Led Zeppelin. They're throwing some crazy time signature changes that it's just like, okay.
Right. And that's always the parlance. We always pull it back to music at time, but throw in something weird, right? Don't get locked into this great predictable groove. Throw in some jazz or jazz hands, Jay. Jay's known. Guy catches a big muskie in the boat. Jay immediately throws up jazz hands. Ah.
What does that mean?
That's when people you put your hands out to the side and wave them like you're like.
Like you just don't care?
No, not quite. It's lamer than that. But don't be afraid to kind of break the cadence. And that's the most important thing with creating these triggers. What? Was that a smooth enough for you? Sorry.
Just go ahead.
Just do it. I believe in you, big man.
Yeah.
But that's the and you don't know, again. For lack of not giving a rat's ass enough to come up with a better analogy.
No, it's true. The whole thing about mixing it up. Yeah. Think of it that way. Yeah.
And the trick is this.
That's how you catch fish.
Well, and it's just like anything that's improvisational. Right. And this is the way I just kind of think about a presentation. I like telling jokes. Jay, if you haven't noticed, I like puns. Pretty quick at it. Throw something out there, right? You got to practice that. You got to practice guitar. You got to practice. You practice your feels. What's your punches, right? And that's how you develop a retrieve, which is continual experimentation, right? So I think of a retrieve with a lure, we have the overall groove. What's the groove of this? What are we doing, right? If you're a shitty dancer, you won't get this, but can you find the beat of a song, right? You're grooving with it. You're kind of in time. What are we going to do in and around that time signature, that groove of what's going on with this beat? What can we do to mix it up? And that's when you need to start thinking about, here's the basic parameters of this bait, and then I'm going to extrapolate, then I'm going to improvise somewhere during that cast. And eventually, when I'm making about telling a joke or playing a guitar lick or coming up with something, is you'll improvise something that'll get bit. And then you do it again, and it gets bid the next time you do it. Improv becomes part of the song, right? It becomes foundational. And I think that's where a lot of people just don't even start thinking that way. And if it sounds goofy, that probably means it's just not in your wheelhouse yet. But
well, if you can't break dance, you probably can't musky fish very well. I mean, bottom line, right, Steve?
No, not quite. But it's truly one of those things. I mean, break dancing is crap too, just with jazz. And if you want to know, all you need to know about break dancing is that girl that was on Team Australia at the Summer Olympics, and she made the Olympics, right? Just Google that trash. Break dancing is garbage. Okay, you can write that one down. Put that in musky cannon. No, I mean, I'm trying to get it across because, I mean, if you think about it, some people are just not wired for improvisation. They're just not. And if you're not, that's fine. But you need to integrate it in what you're doing because, you know, Terry down at the frickin', you know, cheese factory that's got 30 years of hitting the stamp on the top of the thing, that's fine. There's no room for improvisation there. It's actually liberating to realize that there's a place for creation or a place for creativity in the boat. Because the guys that are, you know, the pros, I mean, that's how you get there. So you've got to be creative at some point during that process. That's how you find new things. You know, and break out of that mold and don't be afraid of it. And I always say this to people, what's the worst that could happen? We won't catch one? And, you know, big deal, but you learn anyway. Rambling Jay, from break dancing to new Muskie Beach release, this has been another stellar podcast. Anyway,
yeah,
what do you know?
It has. Never it has. Good stuff.
Never a dull moment of just making it up as we go. You want to talk about improv? This is my week. This is a weekly dose, Jay. But they don't realize this is
it's your outlet for improvisation outside of casting.
This is probably the talking to you and doing this is improvisational. It's everything else is chaos. This is actually strength. Yeah. This is for me. Everything else is just fly by the seat of your pants, but it works. But that's how you get there. It's like, what fire do I put out now? But you know, anyway, Jay, show them jazz hands.
Bingo.
Later.
Hello.
Goodbye. This is not music.